Our Kavosai, good morning. Let's begin. First of all, a very special thank you to Said for sponsoring this morning's refreshments in honor of the birth and bris of his grandson Shalom Issaver, as well as in honor of Father's Day. So we wish that Shalom Emirat Hashem should be Zocha to grow up to be a true Ben Torah, to give incredible nachas to his mishpacha. Halavai Kodesh Baruch Hu should give us all the siyata d'shmaya to be good and to be inspirational fathers. All right, so let's begin. So you did your homework. That wasn't a question, that was a statement. Okay, so we're picking up. We are picking up at the end. Today's daf is Kuf Mem Zayin 140. So we actually have this is Mamish. I know I say it often, but today it's really the MS. This is a beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us today. We're picking up on the last two. So it's Kuf Mem Zayin 147. We're picking up last two lines, Kuf Mem Vav Amud Beis. Man Tana Luhu de Tana Rabban. So we'll say, remember again, just a quick review from the Mishnah. The Mishnah introduced us, it's interesting, you know, we spent a lot of time speaking about the matana, or the ability of a shchiv meira to convey property to someone else. So now, interestingly enough, after we've discussed it many times, what we're now focusing on is the actual mechanics of that type of gift. So the Mishnah introduced us to the idea that one of the interesting ways you could tell the difference between if it's really a matna shchimira or not a matna shchimira is how, is if the shchimira retains something for himself. If the shchimira gives away his property, but he retains something for himself, that's not really a deathbed gift. Because the real essence of a matna shchimira, of a deathbed gift, Rabbi Osai, is what? Is where a person feels that what's going to happen? He's going to die. So what he's doing is, and we'll discuss this, the psychology of this, he's going to die, and therefore, again, he's offloading his property now. It gives him a certain level of yishav hadas, of inner tranquility, to be able to know that he is dispensing his estate, or dispersing his estate, as necessary. If he holds something back for himself, so that's not a matna shchimira, because that, again, because maybe he's hopeful that he's going to recover. This gets into a general discussion about umdina. So what this Mishnah reflects is the idea that we look at people's intent. So we'll say umdina means that when someone makes a statement, or in this case, when someone's conveying property, that what we look at ultimately is their state of mind. So the Gemara spent the end of yesterday's daf trying to figure out who is the opinion who holds that we go basra and rabosai. So let me give you, this is actually very exciting, because what this says is the following. When someone makes a statement, so the shaila is, do we go ahead and look at what they said, or do they look at what they really mean by what they're saying? This is a very important tool in Shalom Bayis. Right? Meaning, again, so everyone knows that in marriage you go basar umdina. It's never about what's said. It's about what's meant. What's meant? So the shaila is, do you apply this to context outside of your marriage? In a transactional level, when somebody says something, do we just take their words at face value and that's it? Or do we look for the intent behind the statement? The Mishnah seems to be telling us that we go basar umdina, which means we don't just look at the statement, but rather, again, we look at the intent behind the statement as well. So the Gemara says, You saw on the homework, although I'm pretty much doing the homework again for you. But we saw on the homework, the Gemara quoted two different opinions who highlight the idea that we go basra umdina. So we'll say, based on that, the Gemara says, man tana luhu de tana rabbanam. So we'll say, who is the opinion who would be behind, whose opinion would be reflected in the following teaching? The tana rabbanam. So let's listen to this. A man was sick, and again, obviously, whenever we speak about sickness, it's not just stomach sickness, but again, someone's on his deathbed. So what happens? So people come in and they ask him, who do you want your property to go to? So we'll say, you know, don't do this in a bigger hole than this. You know, how's the food? How's the food in the hospital? Who do you want your property to go to? We'll say, but the idea over here is, these are individuals who are trying to help the person get his affairs in order. So they're asking him, again, we'll say, which also highlights the need to plan ahead with these kind of things. Why estate planning is important. Because at the end of the day, if a person doesn't have a proper plan in place, it throws mishpachos into chaos in any event. So the Gemara says over here, man is sick. They come and they ask him, who do you want your property to go to after, you know, say these conversations. You should have Rafu Shalema, but, you know, you should have Rafu Shalema. But if you don't, who do you want your property to go to? And we'll say, what does the Chola say? Top of Kuf Mem Zayin. The Chola says, Domesh Yeshli Ben. So we'll say, it's actually a very interesting Lashon over here. Domesh Yeshli Ben. Now we'll say, look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Top Rashbam, Kuf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Dome, Kilomar, Kimeduma, Hayisi Shiyeshli Ben, Akshav Shinodli Sheinli Ben. So he said, Dome, I mean, it used to be that I had a son. It used to be that I had a son. Akshav Sheinli Ben, Now that I don't have a son, so my property should go to so-and-so. So Rabbi, what the Shechiv Meira seems to be saying is the following. He says, I had a son, and apparently again, to the Shechiv Meira's knowledge, his son passed away. So Doma Shiyeshli Ben, you know, when I used to have a son, so parentheses, my property would have been left to my son. Now Nebuch, that I don't have a son, I'm giving all of my property to Ploni. Or, Hayachola Muta B'mita, we'll say a similar case, a man is deathly ill, he's lying on his deathbed. And he says, they ask him, who do you want your property to go to? And he says to them, you know, my wife was pregnant. But now that my wife is no longer pregnant, my wife miscarried, no longer pregnant. So I hereby give all of my property over to Ploni. So we'll say, in both of these cases, what the Shechiv Meira is saying is what? I had a son, or my wife was pregnant. So again, had my son still been alive, I would have given the property. Now, he's not saying all of this. All he's saying is, I had a son, right? I had a son. Now that I don't have a son, my property goes to Ploni. My wife was pregnant. Now that my wife's not pregnant, my nechasim should go to Ploni. And what happens, Rabosai? Vinoda, sheyesh lo ben, o shahaisi ishto mu'uberes. Rabosai, then it turns out that what? The Shechiv Meira was wrong. The son, Baruch Hashem, had not passed away, or the wife had not miscarried. What's the halacha? Ein matanasa matana. So we'll say the gift, i.e. the conveyance that the Shechiv Meira made to Ploni, is not a valid conveyance. I will say, they hear what's fascinating about this case. In this case over here, the Shechiv Meira is making a declarative statement. What's his declarative statement? Right? Nechasav leploni. Now, he happens to be giving us a little bit of a hakdama over here, right? He's giving us a little bit of an introduction about his life story. I had a son. I no longer have a son. Give the nechasim to Ploni. My wife was pregnant. She's not pregnant. Give my nechasim to Ploni. Yet, they both say, what do we see over here? We see over here that we do not look at his statement in a vacuum. We don't just look in the nechasim to Ploni in a vacuum. Rather, what do we look at? We look at the introduction he's giving to us. This is called an umdina. So umdina says that we look not just at the statement that he made, but ultimately, again, at the intention behind the statement. Salema, Reb Shemuel Manasseh, v'lo Rabbanan. So we'll say this would seem to reflect the view of Reb Shemuel Manasseh. Reb Shemuel Manasseh was one of the opinions, ultimately quoted on Kuf Mem Vav Av Beis, who holds that we go basar umdina, we look at the intent of the giver, not only his statement, and therefore, again, this would seem to reflect that view, that we see why is the Shechiv Meira giving the matana to Ploni? Why is he giving the matana to Ploni? Well, we understand that inherent in his statement is the fact that he thought his son was dead, that he thought his wife had miscarried. Now that he realized that he was incorrect about that reality, therefore we assume he would not have wanted to give the gift to Ploni. To which the Gemara says, no, afilu tim rabbanan. We'll say this would be a case where everybody would agree. Everybody would agree that the gift is void when it turns out that the son is alive or that the wife did not miscarry. Why? Because afilu tim rabbanan, doma shiny. So we'll say, in this case over here, the man is being explicit, the Shechiv Meira is being explicit about his intentions. When he says, Domesh Sheyesh Li Ben, Achshav She'ein Li Ben, Nechasai Leploni. You both say, this is not a case of an umdina. This is a case of what? This is more a case of a tenai. This is more a case almost of a conditional gift. That's what he's saying is, the reason I am giving this gift to Ploni is because my son is dead. The reason I'm giving this gift to Ploni is because my wife miscarried. So it's understood, it's almost explicit in the statement, that if my son were still alive, if my wife had not miscarried, then of course I would be giving this gift to my son, or I'd be leaving the property to the child to be born. So thinking to myself, that's the case. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. What's interesting is the following. So we thought up until now, so we've been focusing on, do you look at umdina or not? Do you look at intention behind the statement or not? So that's a machlokes. But apparently what the Gemara is telling me now is, everyone will agree that if the intention is so clearly expressed, it's in other words, if the intention is explicit, then it's no longer a question of intention. It almost becomes a little bit more begeder tnai. It almost becomes like a little bit more as if it's a condition. And everyone will agree with that. But the karla, my karla. So we'll say, so what's the havamina over here? So what's the havamina? What's the havamina? To say that halacha lemaisa, the gift to Ploni should still stand. To which the Gemara says, ma'o detema, what would I have thought? Tsa'ari hu dikamatker. I might have thought that maybe Rabbi Hussein, what's happening over here is that maybe the Shchemira is just voicing his pain. Well, say, I mean, you see this a lot by people who are ill, right? By people who realize that life is coming to an end. It's an incredible period for reflection. So maybe what's happening over here is that when someone asks the Shchemira, "No, what do you want to do with, bless you, what do you want to do with your estate?" That it's just his opportunity to reflect on the pain of the past. So he's just bringing up his son who passed away. He's bringing up the fact that his wife miscarried. So meaning, maybe he's not making a conditional gift, but maybe he's just reflecting on his tsar. Kamashmala, no. Kamashmala, we understand that what effectively he is saying is, I'm giving this gift to Ploni because I don't have a living son. I'm giving this gift to Ploni because my wife miscarried. Therefore, when it turns out, that's what Rabbi say. When it turns out, that's what? That his information was wrong. We understand ultimately again that the gift to Ploni is in fact void. So we'll say, so this introduces us to a new dynamic. So we have machlokis as to whether or not, do we go basar umdina, not go basar umdina? Do we look at the intention of the giver or not look at the intention of the giver? So that's the machlokis. But everyone will agree when ultimately again there is a clear expression of intent, that there's a clear expression that I'm giving the gift because of X reason or Y reason, that's built into the very transaction. And therefore, if my intention was flawed, then ultimately everyone will agree that the gift was voidable. Good. I'm going to say it. So we'll say, Kof Mem Zayin Amud Aleph 147a. We're about 8 lines in to those joining us. Amar Rab Zera, Amarav, Minayin Lematna Shchemira Shehu Minat Torah. So we'll say, ultimately, again, I think you want to ask an interesting idea. And we'll say, this is very dramatic. How do we know that the ability of a shchivmira, we'll say, to convey property without kinyan? We'll say, you understand, the incredible novelty of a shchivmira is what? That he has the ability to convey property to someone else without any formal mechanism of a kinyan. Right? And we'll say, it's as if it was conveyed through a kinyan. How do we know that a shchivmira has, how do we know, midaraisa, that a shchivmira has the ability to convey property? Or to convey assets. Sorry? Generally you need Eidos. You do need Eidos to a Matna Shchemira, because otherwise, remember, the simple issue is, how does anyone know that it's happening? He died. Right? So Lamaisi, you need some type of Eidos. But the idea over here is, remember, we say, Divrei Shchemira, Keksuvin V'chim Surin Damu. It's as if they're written and given over. So Shchemira need not avail himself of any classical avenue of Kinyan. Rather, his words are enough. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Nachman, it says the name of Rav, I'm sorry. The Gemara asks, Rabbi Zira asks the name of Rav, where do we know that Amal HaShchemira is effective in Midaraisa? And we'll say, now, if you take a look at that, so the Rashbam understands over here, Minay Lamatna HaShchemira, he says, Shekona B'dibor below Kenyan Sudar, that the Shchemira has the ability to convey something over with words, even without a Kenyan. Kigo Mitzuba Machmas Misa. So we'll say, so according to the Rashbam, the Gemara is literally asking, how do we know that Amatna HaShchemira works in Midaraisa? I will say Tosis and Divrei Maaseh Minayin. So the first Tosis on the right, on the left hand side. If you skip 3 lines down, he says the Gemara doesn't mean to say that Matna Shchemira is a Doraisa. What the Gemara really means to say is the following: Ela Asmachta Ba'amahu. What the Gemara is asking, I will say, is no one's actually suggesting that a Matna Shchemira is Doraisa. What the Gemara is suggesting is what Rabbi Hussein, that it's an asmachta. What's an asmachta? Asmachta is something that is rabbinic in nature, but that finds like a biblical foothold. So like a called scriptural allusion. So according to the Rashbam, the Gemara is literally suggesting that a matna shchemira is doraisa. According to Tosis, no, it's not doraisa. It's the Rabbanan. So we're going to prove this on Amud Beis. It's the Rabbanan. But can you give us like a scriptural allusion to this? So we'll say this is very exciting. So the Gemara says, Shneimar. The pasuk says, "You shall go ahead and literally pass over the nachala to his daughter." So we spent a lot of time speaking about this particular pasuk. Remember, again, this is about if a man doesn't have sons, so his nachala, his inheritance, his right, the yerusha, goes to the daughters. So we'll say, so listen to this. If you look at the Rashbam, it's actually this is one of these such a nice little gift. The Rashbam is right across. You don't have to search for it. Just move, shift your eyes to the right, and the Rashbam is right there. Shnemar v'avartem es nachaloso, d'havim matzi l'michtav ish kiyos u'beinein lo. Because it will say, the pasuk could have said, if a man dies and he has no son, nachaloso lebito. His inheritance goes to his daughter. Why does the Torah have to use the lashon of v'ha'avartem? Why v'avartem, which means to pass over, to shift? You don't need that word. That word is extra. What does that word teach us? The Gemara says to us, there is another passing over of inheritance that is like this one. Ve'ezo, and which passing of inheritance is this? Zu matna shchivmira. So also the Torah is teaching us that Lamaisa, the extra Vavartam, teaches us that there is another way to convey a state property that is as effective as any other mechanism of Yerusha. What mechanism is this, or what event is this? This is a matna shchivmira. So that extra word of avartem teaches us that a matna shchivmira is effective midaraisa. Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Baravua Mehacha. So what's Rav Nachman Amar Baravua from a different source? Unesatem. The pasuk says unesatem es nachaloso la'echav. Right, again, the same laws of Yerusha Bosai. So the pasuk says you shall give his nachala to his brothers. Shabbosai, again, same idea. This ultimately, again, is an extra. That word, unesatem, is extra. It could have just said, nachalaso la'achiv. It could have just said, the nachala will ultimately go to the brothers. The word, unesatem, is extra. Yesh lacha nesina harashi kazu. There's another conveyance of property that is as effective as this one. Ve'ezo, which one is this? Zu matna shchimira. But say, ultimately, again, this is matna shchimira. So we'll say, both of these opinions are learning out the ability of a matna shchimira to successfully convey property from an extra word in the laws of Yerusha. One is learning it out from the word of Havartem, one is learning it out from the word of Unisatem, but the common denominator is both feel that these words are extra. So says the Gemara, Rav Nachman, my time alo amar, may Havartem. So why does Rav Nachman learn it out from Unisatem? Why doesn't he learn it out from the word v'ha'avartem? Because it will say that word v'avartem is necessary to teach another law according to Rabbi. What's the law? The Sanya. Rabbi Omer, Bekulan ne'emra bahen nesina, v'kan ne'emra ha'avara. Rabbi says that in all of the other inheritance situations, the Torah uses the word nesina, yet here by a daughter inheriting, the Torah uses the word ha'avara. Why? Because also remember again, why does the Torah use the lashon of ha'avara when it comes to a daughter inheriting? Because also when a daughter inherits property from her father, she has the ability to pass over, or not pass over, but what?
Transverse.
Give him a couple of to that. Good. Right, transverse. Right, good. Transverse. Right, he has the ability to have.
Cross.
Okay. The idea being is a whole site that ultimately, again, to the word nesina would mean to give. The word havara means to literally, again, transverse or transmit or pass over something from one place to another. Who has the ability to do that? So the Gemara says, it's only a daughter. Why? Because also remember, again, with a daughter, if a daughter inherits, it's possible that over time, what's going to happen, Abosai? That property that ends up with her is ultimately going to end up in the hands of, bless you, of another shevet. Because if she predeceases her husband or her son, ultimately, again, this property ends up going to another shevet. Therefore, the Torah dafka used lashon of avartem by a daughter. So the Gemara said, Rabbi Zira, my time alo amar mivinesatem. So Rabbi Zira, why does he not learn it out from unesatem? Archei dekrohu, because Rabbi Zira says unesatem on both sides not to be darshin. Unesatem is just a regular lashon of the pasuk. Rav Menashe bar Yirmiyah Amar Mehachar. What's the second white line? Rav Menashe bar Yirmiyah says that we can learn out that a matna shchemira works in the following. Now, Bosai, interestingly enough, he is now going to quote a pasuk from Navi, not a pasuk from Chumash. So this is actually a very important episode. He says, it was in those days, Chizkiyo HaMelech is going to die. Vayovo Elov Yishayo Ben Amos HaNavi, Vayomer Elov. So we'll say, this is the famous speaker Cholim visit between Chizkiyo and Yishayo. Remember again, Chizkiyo is dying. Why is Chizkiyo dying? Why is he dying? Chizkiyo refuses to get married. Right? Why does he refuse to get married? Because he sees Berach HaKodesh that if he has children, they're going to be Rishoyim. So he makes a conscious decision not to get married, not to have children. Now understand, there's been a little bit of a fallout between Chizkiyo and Yishayo to begin with, but Yishayo, he goes ahead and goes to be Mevakir Cholim. So he shows up in Chizkiyo's house, and what does he say? He leaves one simple message. Omer Alav, Ko Amar Hashem, Tzav LeBeischo, Kimeis Ata. Well, this is quite a big Cholim visit. Right? Right? He shows up and he says, Chizkiyo, you better give final instructions to the members of your household. Why? You're gonna die. You're gonna die. Now remember, Kitzav LeBeischo, Vata, Velotia Betsa. So the Gemara says, Velotichya. You're gonna die and you're not gonna live. By the way, that's an interesting lesson in and of itself. You're going to die, you're not going to live, which ultimately, again, is the way of Yishayahu and Chizkiyo. You're going to die. And by the way, the reason for your death is your own fault. Kadosh Baruch Hu is upset at you for not marrying and ultimately, again, not having children. But I will say, now, I'll explain this in just a moment. What we're picking up on this is the following. That Yishayahu tells Chizkiyo, he says, Tzav Leveischa. Commander, in other words, give instructions to your household about how to divide up your property. What do you see from here? Betzava aba alma. You see that a shchibira has the ability to go ahead and what? Has the ability to dispense, or I should say allocate, his estate through simple verbal commands. So from here we see that what? That divrei shchemira kiksuvin v'chimsurim d'rabosai. Now granted, this is a pasuk from Navi, not a pasuk from Chumash, but nevertheless, it's biblical in nature. This works well according to Tosis, that we're not really saying that divrei shchemira kiksuvin v'chimsurim damu is actually a d'oraisa, rather we're saying it's a d'rabanan, but we're looking for a biblical proof text. So a pasuk from Navi works just fine. So you understand, this is an important episode. Why? Because l'maisa, again, this is where the Gemara Maseches, I think it's Brachos or Shabbos, but the Gemara brings down that Chizkiyo turns to Yishayo and says, why am I going to die? And remember, Yishayo says to him, you're going to die because you never married. Chizkiyo says, I never married because I made a conscious decision not to marry because I saw that my children are going to be Rishayim. To which Yishayo says to Chizkiyo, remember, why are you getting involved in God's cheshbonos? It's not your business. Your business is to get married, try to have children. So remember again, Chizkiyo says to Yishayo, what? It's fine, Yishayo, you have a daughter. You have a single daughter. I'll marry who? I'll marry her. To which Yishayo says, too late. Too late, you're going to die. To which Chizkiyo says, I am a descendant. You have David HaMelech, and we have a Messiah in our household. Even if a sharp sword is against someone's neck, you never stop asking God for mercy. In other words, what Chizkiyo was saying is, it's never too late. Yishayo says, okay. Chizkiyo marries Yishayo's daughter. Chizkiyo is healed from his illness. They happen to have a son by the name of Menashe. Menashe becomes the longest reigning monarch. He reigns for 55 years. He was a Rasha Merusha for 33 of them. He introduces Avodah Zarah into every single corner of the land. For the last 22 years of his life, he himself is a Chozer B'tshuva. He becomes a great tzaddik. He dies in a state of righteousness. He tries to undo all of the terrible damage that he introduced into the land, and he was unsuccessful. Meaning, he had been so successful in the first 33 years of his reign of introducing idolatry that he could not fully dial back all that he did. He tried to the best of his ability. So on one hand, amazingly enough, Chizkiyo was right. but he was wrong. Meaning he was right in that he had a son who was a Rasha for 33 years of his reign. But at the end of the day, Menashe ends off his life as a tzaddik. Menashe is a Chozer B'tshuva for 22 years, and at least himself dies in a personal state of righteousness. In any event, the Gemara says, you see from here that Halacha L'maisa, a Shchimira has the ability to command his household in the conveyance of property, and that verbal command is as effective as actual kinyanim. So let's listen to this. The Gemara says, Rami Bar Yecheskel on Mehachar. Rami Bar Yecheskel has a different approach, or a different source. This is all amazing. V'achitofel ra kilo nes ta'atzaso. Achitofel saw that his eitzah did not bear fruit. Now we'll say, who's Achitofel? Achitofel was one of the advisors of David HaMelech. Now what happens? We know Avshalom rebels against David. Avshalom's rebellion was one of David HaMelech's punishments for the episode with Bathsheba. There were three punishments that David HaMelech got for the episode with Bathsheba. Number one, that he had an infant son who passed away. Number two, that there'd be a rebellion from within his own household. Number three, that he himself would be stricken with illness. So all those three punishments happened as a result of the episode with Bathsheba. When Avshalom rebels, some of David's closest inner circle, some of his own cabinet, defect towards Avshalom. One of the high-level defections was a man by the name of Achitofel. Achitofel was one of David HaMelech's closest advisors. He goes, for whatever reason, to Avshalom. Now remember again, Avshalom runs David out of Yerushalayim. David HaMelech will not fight against his son. Much to the chagrin of his own advisors, he will not fight against his son. So he gathers just his closest advisors, they flee Yerushalayim. Achitofel tells Avshalom, you run after David now. He's compromised, he's weak. If you run after him now, you'll catch up with him, you'll kill him, and you will become the king. If you allow him time to regroup, you will lose. Avshalom consults with Achitofel, but he also has some other advisors. Bless you. His other advisors, again, happen to be much younger, unseasoned individuals. They say, no, don't worry, David doesn't pose any threat to you. Consolidate your power here in Yerushalayim. You'll run after David later on. Avshalom chooses to side with the unseasoned advisors. When Achitofel realizes what has just happened, that his advice has not been listened to, he realizes that what? The rebellion is going to be unsuccessful. David HaMelech is going to come back into power. Achitofel also knows that when David HaMelech comes back to power, what's going to happen to him? He's going to be executed because as a traitor. So watch this. What does Achitofel do? So this is it's a tragic scene. Achitofel ra kilo nesta atzasom. Achitofel realizes that his, bless you, his eitzah was not taken. Vayachavo shesachamar. So he saddles up his donkey. Vayelech al beiso el iro. He goes back home to his family. Vayetzav el beiso. He gives final commands to his family. Vayechanek. And he kills himself. Achitofel took his own life. Now both sides. Now this is actually quite traumatic over here. So what's the raya? The raya over here is that Achitofel just gave verbal commands to his family, but those verbal commands were executed as if, again, they were written down. Now the great novelty in this particular case is what? Now, interestingly enough, the Gemara is treating Achitofel as a shchiv mera. Even though, again, he's not a shchimra, he's perfectly healthy, but the fact that it was clear that his intention was to kill himself, therefore, again, his life is ending, and therefore the Gemara looks ultimately... Now, by the way, the reason Achitofel wants to dispense his estate before he kills himself is why. It is actually quite interesting, because if you die and you are a mor machos, meaning if you are executed by the king, this is why Achitofel takes his own life, if you are executed by the king for treason, your property becomes the king's property. Achitofel realizes that the only way to keep his property in his family is to take his own life. So he chooses to go ahead and dispense his own estate amongst his sons. Then he kills himself, thereby ensuring ultimately that his family does not suffer because of his mistakes. But the point the Gemara is making over here is, he goes back home, vayetzav esbe. So I will say the lashon of tzav is lashon of a verbal transmission. See, he's giving his verbal instructions, and yet you see that is enough to go ahead and affect the property transfer. So from here you see that divrei shchimira kiksuvin v'chim surin damu. So I will say, once the Gemara brings up Achitofel, the Gemara says, turn around, it's actually quite amazing. Shlosha dvarim tziva Achitofel as banav. Rav said Achitofel didn't just go ahead and convey his property, he also gave like an ethical will, right? He gave over final instructions to his family. So what did he tell his children? Number one, Al tibu machlokes. So the first piece of advice he tells them is, you know what? Don't get involved in machlokes. Because I will say, those who get involved in machlokes, everyone loses. Or I should say, everyone loses something. There are very few people who actually gain from machlokes. More people actually lose. So don't get involved in machlokes. That's a piece of advice number two. Number two. Al timrodu b'malchus beis David. Don't rebel against the Davidic king. The Davidic kingdom is blessed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do not rebel against that kingdom. Next, the Yom Tov Shalat Seres Barur Zaruchitim. Vice number three I will say is, if ultimately, again, if you see that on Shavuos, it's a clear day, that's a good omen. That's a good omen for the wheat crop. Plant wheat that year. Plant wheat that year. And wasn't it interesting enough, you know, Shavuos is the time where they harvest the wheat. So he's saying over here, if Shavuos is clear, that's a good omen for next year's crop. So this is an agricultural piece of advice. So it's interesting, what he's giving his children is, he's giving them moral ethical advice. Don't get involved in machlokas because it doesn't pay. Don't rebel against the Davidic kingdom. And I'm going to give you some agricultural business advice as well. If the weather on Shavuos is good, that is a good omen for the coming year's crop. Go ahead and plant wheat that year. So the Gemara says, Mar Zucha Amar Balo Itmar. Mar Zucha says, no, what he told them is not if Shavuos is sunny, but rather if Shavuos is cloudy. If Shavuos is a cloudy day, that is a good omen for the wheat. Plant wheat then. Rabbi said, they had these type of omens, these agricultural omens. Se Itmar, Amri, so the Gemara says, Amri Nardoi, Meshed Rav Yaakov. So Rabbi said, the Nardoim had a different version of this exchange than Rav Yaakov. Lo borer borer mamish, for lo bolo bolo mamish. The day doesn't have to be totally clear, and the day doesn't have to be totally cloudy. Elo afilu bolo veruach tzifonis min hashavtu zehu borer. I will say rather what it means is the following: if it's cloudy, but there's an easter, but there is a northerly wind, right? If it's cloudy but there's a northerly wind, that's okay also. Why? Rabbi said that's also called the clear day. Because if there's a northerly wind, then at the end of the day, the wind is going to push away the clouds. Even if it's a cloudy day, but there's a northerly wind, that's like it's a clear day, and this would be a good omen ultimately for planting wheat that year. Amarli Rabbi Abba Ravashi. Amarli Rabbi Abba Ravashi. So what's Rabbi Abba said to Ravashi? Anan ad Rav Yitzchak Baravdimi Masnin Allah. We go ahead and we'll say, and we understand this, like Rav Yitzchak Baravdimi. The Amar Rav Yitzchak, we'll say, now that we brought up this whole thing by Achitofel, and cloudy day, clear day, the Gemara brings up other etzos like this. What did Rav Yitzchak Baravdimi say? Rav Yitzchak Baravdimi, Motze Yom Tova Achron Shalchag. So we'll say, listen to this. So on the Matzah Yom Tov Acharon Shalchag, which Shabbos was the last day of Sukkos, right? Matzah Yom Tov Acharon Shalchag, which ultimately again is after Shmini Atzeres. So remember again, after Shmini Atzeres, after Sukkos is the official beginning of the rainy season. Now again, we try to push off, of course, the beginning of the rainy season until after Sukkos, in order that it not interfere with our performance of the mitzvah. But Lamaisa, again, after the Yom Tov of Sukkos is when everyone goes out to look at the weather. Hakol Tzofin La'ashan Hama'aracha. I will say, everyone went out to see the Ashna Ma'aracha, the smoke that came off of the Mizbeach. Why? Everyone wants to see, Rabbi Osai, in which direction are the winds blowing. Depending on how the smoke of the Ma'aracha shifts, ultimately depends, will show you how the winds are blowing. Watch this. So the Gemara says, Nota klape tzafon, if ultimately, again, the Asher HaMa'aracha, if the smoke, the column of smoke coming off the Mizbeach, shifted klape tzafon, if it went towards the north, Aniyin smechim, Uba'alei batim atzavim. We'll say, so if the smoke shifted towards the north, so ultimately again a northern wind, then the Aniyim were happy, and the Balabatim, we'll say, the merchants were unhappy. Because what did that show? Mepnei shegishmei shana meruvin. We'll say, that showed that it was going to be a very rainy year. A very rainy year. Now what happens if it's a very rainy year? So if it's very rainy, that means there's a lot of humidity. If there's a lot of humidity, then what? You can't store fruit for a long time. If you can't store fruit for a long time, then what happens? Then the market is flooded with fruit. If the market is flooded with fruit, then what happens? Prices go down. So the aniyim are happy because they'll be able to get merchandise at a discount. But lemaisa, again, so the aniyim are happy. Thank you, Baruch Hashem. But the merchants ultimately, again, are going to be unhappy because at the end of the day, they're not going to get the full price for their wares. So the Gemara goes weiter. Next. If at the end of the day the winds shifted towards the south, southerly wind, then aniyim atzavim, ultimately again the aniyim, so the poor people are very upset. But the merchants are happy. Why? What does that show? There'll be less rains, less humidity. Therefore, the merchants could store the crop. If the merchants could store the crop, then they can regulate the release of produce into the marketplace, in which case, again, they can ensure that prices stay high. The merchants are happy because they make money. The aniyim are upset because ultimately produce is more expensive. Klape mizrach. This is all talking about the column of smoke that came off the Mizbeach. If the column of smoke ultimately shifted towards the east, Klape Mizrach, Hakol Smechem, everyone is happy. Because apparently if it went towards the east, then what? There'd be just enough rainfall that there'd be enough produce. The Balabatim could go ahead and store something, but not everything. It's like market equilibrium. The Balabatim make their money, but the prices are not too high that the Aniyim can't afford anything. Klape Marav, Rabose, ultimately again, if the pillar of smoke shifted towards the west, Hakolat Sovim, everyone was upset. Why was everyone upset? Because Ma'ase said that, that showed drought. That showed drought. Or Minu. So according to this Braisa, so if easterly wind, everybody was happy, westerly wind, everybody was upset. Or mini, for Gemara is Akasha. Mizrach is the Olam Yafa, Ma'arav is the Olam Kasha. Yet the Braisa says, an easterly wind is always good, a westerly wind is always bad. Rach tzifonis, yafa lechitin. A northern wind is good for wheat. B'shashevi ushlish. Ultimately, again, when they have matured to one third of their maturity. The kasha lezesim, b'shashenitsu. But they're not good for olives when the olives have blossomed. V'rach diromis, kasha lechitin, b'shashevi ushlish. A southerly wind is harmful for wheat. When the wheat ultimately again has reached one third of its maturity, but ultimately is good for olives when they've begun to blossom. The way to remember this is the following, meaning the shulchan is in the north and of the Beis Hamikdash, and the menorah is in the south. So both say, therefore, why is this a good mnemonic? Because the shulchan, which had the shlechem aparim, the bread on it, bread is made from wheat. Therefore, you see from here that what? Northern winds are good for wheat. So, the menorah, which is in the south, olive oil, right? So ultimately, again, the southern winds are good for the olives. Hai marbi didei, svahai marbi didei. Each of us say each direction supports its own. So the northern wind, which again correlates to the northern direction of the shulchan, is good for the wheat. The southern wind, which correlates to the southern direction of the menorah, ultimately is good for the olives. So the point over here is you see that there's a stira. Are the northern winds good or are the southern, excuse me, are the eastern winds good or are the western winds good? So we'll say we have a contradiction between the Braisa and the previous Braisa. Lo kasha, it's not a contradiction. Halan v'haluhu. And we'll say it all depends on your orientation. Look at the Rashivam. We'll say it's the last three lines. Halan, libnei bavel, hashochnim b'metzula, v'artzenu m'luchlachas, ve'inu tzricha l'matar kolkach. Shabbos say Bavel, which Shabbos say had a lot of rain, and the truth is Bavel itself, the soil was except. I'll say it differently. Bavel was very humid. So because Bavel was very humid, Bavel did not need an abundance of rain. So also listen to this. So therefore, for Bnei Bavel, the western wind, which I will say brings with it an incredible amount of rain, was not good for Bnei Bavel. That's not good for Bnei Bavel, because for Bnei Bavel, an abundance of rain is actually detrimental. Why? Because the soil itself is already moist. Umizrachis Yafa. Therefore, for Bnei Bavel, the southern wind is bad, because southern wind brings a lot of rain. The eastern wind, I'm sorry, I keep saying the southern. The western wind is detrimental. The eastern wind is good. Ubraisa kamaisa demasanya ipcha demasni ipcha lubni libne Israel shart sam gavav v'sichla matarbe. Rabosai, on the flip side, Eretz Yisrael needs as much rain as possible. So therefore, again, Rabosai, for Bavel, which doesn't need a lot of rain, the western wind, which brings with it rain, is detrimental. The eastern wind, which takes away rain, is better. For Bnei Eretz Yisrael, who need wind, who need rain, so the western wind is good. The eastern wind is detrimental. Fine. So it says Dima Rabbah, let's go weiter. So the Gemara says, Halan v'haluhu. Hold on, but so the Gemara says, Tanya, Abba Shalomer, Yom Tov Atz Yom Tov Shalatzeres Borer, Simen Yafa L'Cholash Shana Kula. So let's remember again, as we said before, this is how we got into this whole discussion, that one of the things that Achitofel told his children was what? That if on the Yom Tov of Shavuos, if it's a clear day, that is a good omen for the wheat crop for the coming year. Sabashol said, Yom Tov Ashalatar is Bar, Simin Yafala the Chalashan the Kula. If Shavuos, I will say, is a clear day, that is a good omen for the crop for the rest of the year. Amrav Zvid, Hai Yom Akama Dere Shasa, will say, on Rosh Hashanah, I Chamim Kula Shasa Chamima. Will say, if Rosh Hashanah is hot, that means it's going to be a hot year. Ikar, if Rosh Hashanah is a cool day, then Kula Shasa Karira. Then I will say that's a good omen that the rest of the year is going to be cool as well. L'mayin afkimi, I will say, who cares? So what is this, like a meteorological thing? What does this matter? I will say, watch this. Look how beautiful this is. The Tfilasa Shal Kohen Gadol. I will say, it matters for the Tfilah of the Kohen Gadol. I will say, take a look at the Rashbam. The Tfilasa Shal Kohen Gadol. Shai Mispano B'yam Kippurim. Shetia Shana Sug Yeshuma Ushechuna. Listen to this. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says that, remember, part of the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is that he davened, ultimately again, that the atmospheric conditions should be conducive to an abundant crop. Therefore, I will say, it's important for the Kohen Gadol to take note of the weather on Rosh Hashanah, because the weather on Rosh Hashanah sets the tone for the rest of the year. Therefore, again, if it was a cold day or it was a hot day, so the Kohen Gadol would adjust his tefillos accordingly to ensure that, again, it was the proper weather ultimately for the rest of the year in order to ensure agricultural abundance for Klal Yisrael. So we'll say, this brings to an end a discussion about the winds. I do want to point out to you something very interesting. If you go back to Amud Aleph for just a moment, so remember, again, the Gemara set up the following idea. The Gemara said, the Gemara said that on the Yom Tov Acharon Shal Sukkis, on the Yom Tov Acharon Shal Chag, on the last day, Mani Matzei Shmini Atzeres, what would everybody do? Everybody would go out to the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, and what would they look at? They would look at the Ashan HaMa'aracha. They would look at the smoke ascending off the Mizbeach, and what would they look for? What would they look for? To see which direction that smoke was going in. Because depending on what direction, that would give them an insight about what was going up with the rainfall. But as Tosis, look at Tosis, Dirim Aschal Chot Sofin La Ashtram Aracha, Parakaman Diyuma, Parak La Medisnan, Lo Nitzcha Haruach Ashtram Aracha. We know, the Gemara says, that one of the 10 miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash was what? Was that the Ashan HaMizbeach always ascended straight up. It always went up in a straight pillar. The wind never impacted it. So how could the Gemara say over here that what? That the wind blew the Ashan. So Bosai, there's a simple teretz. The simple terus by the Gemara says, Gemara gives two terus. And Rosai said, this is in Satosis, this is actually interesting. Satosis says, Umeshani le Shapir. So then Satosis says, I'm not doing the work for you, you go look it up. Right? So the Gemara Mesechas, Yuma, on Chaf Aleph on Beis, has quotes this Gemara verbatim that we just had and asked the same Kasha. So we'll say, so first of all, before we get to the Gemara's answer, so the Rishonim give a different answer. The Rishonim say that according to many, when the Gemara talks about the Asar Nisim, the 10 miracles that occurred, and that the pillar of smoke coming off the Mizbeach never veered one direction of another, according to many opinions, that doesn't refer to the outer Mizbeach. That actually refers to the Mizbeach HaPnimi, the Mizbeach HaKitores. That the Mizbeach HaKitores, the smoke itself always ascended in a pillar. But that's not Pasha Pshat. Pasha Pshat, Rabosai, is that it was the smoke of the Mizbeach HaChitzon, the outer Mizbeach. So how could the Gemara say over here, everybody's looking ultimately to see which direction the pillar of smoke went in. So the Gemara says, gives an amazing answer. The Gemara says, the Ozli Va'asi Kedikli, Va'avduri lo hava mivdar. What it means, Rabbi Osai, is the pillar of smoke, literally, listen to this lashon, the azal va'asi kedikli, it swayed like a palm tree. However, v'ibduri lo hava mivdar, it never dispersed. So, Rabbi Osai, so the miracle was the column of smoke always remained intact. But what? It could absolutely move one direction, which also, if you think about it, is even a greater miracle, right? Meaning, so the pillar of smoke could be swayed by the winds, but ultimately, again, it always remained intact. So therefore, again, that's the reconciliation. So the miracle was, it always remained intact, but the Gemara says over here, they looked on Matzei Sukkis ultimately to go ahead and see which direction the winds were blowing in. All right, quite beautiful. Told you it was amazing tomorrow. Let's say Kufnam Zayin on the base. Second line. So let's listen to this. So up until now, the Gemara said that what? That a matna shchiv mira is midaraisa, is biblical in nature. Now the Gemara comes along and says no. Quotes the second opinion of Nachman says that in fact, a matna shchiv mira bosa is only midirabanan. Shema Tichrav Daitalav. Why did the rabbis institute Rabosai that a matna shchimira, that a shchimira could convey property to another party? And it's kiksuvin v'chimstrum damu, that if a shchimira conveys property just verbally, that has the ability or that has the impact as if it's committed in writing, there's a real kinyan. The rabbis instituted this Rabosai for what purpose? In order to give a shchimira yishavadas. Rabosai, that when a person is dying, we don't want anything to exacerbate their difficult or precarious state. Therefore, in order to give a shchimira some yishavada, some inner tranquility, we tell a shchimira, whatever you say, meaning whatever you command that you want done with your estate, it's as good as being in writing. It's as if the kinyonim were performed. But it is a rabbinic mechanism, not a biblical mechanism. Umiyamar Rav Nachman, did Rav Nachman really say this? V'amar Rav Nachman, we've actually learned this case before in Baba Kama and in Baba Metzia and the Ksuvis and in Kiddushin. Right? So listen to this. So now, and again in Baba Basra. So what happens? Someone sells a shtarchov to someone. Just to illustrate this case, I lend $10,000 to Ruvain. And what happens? I decide. People do this all the time. No, you sell notes, right? I don't know what this is called, but selling notes. So essentially what I'm doing is I sell to Shimon the ability to collect from Reuven. I sell the note. Hamocha shtarchol v'chavero. Watch this. Hamocha shtarchol v'chavero. V'chazar u'machlo. Now watch this. Let's say after I go ahead and I sell the note. So I lent Reuven the money. So I hold the note. Remember, the creditor, the lender, always holds the document because that's my vehicle of collection. So I lent Reuven $10,000. I sell the note to Shimon for some amount of money. Now, but Pashas, I'm assuming that when you sell notes, you probably sell a note for less than the face value. I want the money now. So I sell it to Shimon for $9,000. And then what happens, Rabosai? Then I go over to Reuven and I forgive the debt. I forgive the debt. So Rabosai, what's the halacha in such a situation? Macho. Rabosai, the halacha is that in fact the debt is forgiven. Not only that, afilu yoresh macho. Well, say, let's say I pass away, my children inherit my estate, and one of my children forgives the debt to Reuven, so the debt is forgiven. Now, Bosai, let's talk about this in just a moment. Now, obviously, Bosai, if we're going to say, now, why is it machol? Take a look at the Rashbam. This is actually quite interesting. First, why line in the Rashbam? Machol, delo machol lo rishon l'sheni, ela kol z'chushetav lo yado, velo adif haylokiach mimalvet. Now, Bosai, this presupposes the following. When Reuven borrows money from me, there is a relationship that has been created between me and Reuven. That relationship is a non-transferable relationship. Now, what I can do is, I can give to Shimon the shtar. And with the shtar, Shimon could show up ultimately again at Reuven's doorstep and collect the money. But that does not make Shimon the creditor. In other words, Shimon is not called the creditor. Shimon is not called the malva. Shimon is called the guy with the shtar. There is a unique relationship that is established between borrower and lender that is a non-transferable relationship. See, even if I sell the right of collection to a third party, that doesn't make that third party the malva. I am forever the malva. Not only that, but when I die, that my malva status transfers to my children, which means that even after I sell the note, I have the ability to, what Rabbi saying, to cancel it, to forgive it. Now, obviously, if I forgive it, what happens? Shimon's upset, right? To put it mildly, right? Obviously, then I owe Shimon money. In other words, you can't have it both ways. If I took the money from Shimon, I gave him the document, and then I choose to forgive the debt, obviously, I owe a refund to Shimon. But the point over here is I retain that power. Now, watch this. However, says the Gemara, even in this case, even Shmuel holds that after you sell a debt, so that Malva, there's a unique relationship between Malva and Lova, that is a non-transferable relationship. And therefore, Malva could go ahead and forgive the debt even after it's been sold. Mode Shmuel, Shemnosno b'matna shchiv mira, de'ino yochol l'mochlo. Wow. So we'll say even Shmuel holds that all of this is when I sell the note in a regular way. But even Shmuel will say what, Rabbi Osai? That if I went ahead, and the way I transmitted that note, in other words, Rabbi Osai, I'm a shchimira. I'm right, the malva is a shchimira. And the malva goes ahead and what? Through matna shchimira, transmits this debt to another person, even Shmuel will agree that the shchimira no longer has the ability to, what, Rabbi Osai? No longer has the ability to forgive the debt. Which Rabbi Osai is very dramatic. Because what it's telling me now is that a shchimira, right? So if you want to say that a matna shchimira is doraisa, mishum hachi eino yochol limcho. I understand, Rabbi Osai, if you say that a matna shchimira is doraisa, then what? I understand then when the shchimira transmits this halva, this debt, to another person, I understand then why the shchimira no longer has the ability to cancel the debt. He's employed a biblical mechanism for conveyance, and therefore, again, he no longer has the right to negate the debt, to forgive the debt. However, if you say that a matna shchimira is dirabanan, so I don't understand. If the shchimira conveys, right, the shchimira, remember, is the malva. The shchimira is the creditor. So the shchimira lent Reuven $10,000. Now the shchimira wants to convey the debt to Shimon. See, if you say that what? That a matna shchimira is doraisa. So I understand why once shchimira transfers it over to Shimon, he can no longer forgive the debt. But if you say that a matna shchimira is dirabanan, so just because he transmitted it over to Shimon, why can't he go ahead and forgive it? To which the Gemara says, you're right. Eino shel Torah va'asa kishel Torah. Bosai, this is actually a very interesting formulation. Matna shchimira bosai is a drabanon. It is not a doraisa. It's not a doraisa. It is a rabbinic mechanism. But the rabbis endowed it with the strength as if it was a doraisa, which Bosai is quite a dramatic statement. The idea being is the rabbis have. We see this in other areas of halacha where the rabbis create a rabbinic construct, but endow that rabbinic construct with biblical strength. So matna shchimira is a derabanan endowed with biblical-like strength. Therefore, if the shchimira conveys the right to the halva to someone else, he no longer has the ability to go ahead and what? Forgive that debt. It is fully transferred over to the recipient. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman. Shchimira was another interesting case. Sha'amar yadur ploni bebayi zeh. Yocha ploni peros dekel zeh lo amar klum. If a shchimira on his deathbed says, I hereby convey the right to Ploni to live in this house, or I hereby convey the right to Ploni to eat the fruits of this tree, such a statement is meaningless. Right? Why? I'll say, take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. It's about 10 lines up from the bottom. Amar Rav Nachman, Shchimin Hashem, Amar Yidra Ploni Bevayizeh, Yochol Ploni Peros Dekal Zeh Lomar Klum, Shadir Ein Bo Mamish. Ulaknos, Laknosa. Uperos Dekal, Nami Ein Adam Makna Davar Shalom Bali Olam. Dechevan De Matnas Bar Afilu Bekin Sibilo Kani. I'll say, listen to this. What the Gemara is saying is the following. Matna Shchimin, I'll say, only works with a tangible. So if you convey to someone the right to live somewhere, I'll say, the right to live in a place is not a tangible right. The right to get future fruit of a tree is not a tangible right. A Shchiv Mira can only go ahead and convey over something that is tangible. Therefore, says the Gemara, Ad Shiyomer, Tnu Bais Ze Leploni Biyadurbo. So we'll say, if I go ahead and I say, give this home to Ploni, that he could live in it. Now we'll say, that's tangible. So you see the difference over here? If I say, Ploni has the right to live in this home, that's an intangible, and that can't be conveyed through a Matna Shchimira. If I say, this home should belong to Ploni, so that he has the right to live there. In other words, in this case, I'm not necessarily giving him ownership of the home. I'm giving him the right to live in the home. What I'm doing is, I'm conveying to him the home in order that he could live in it, or Tnu Dekel Zela Ploni Biyochal Perosav, or give to Ploni again this Dekel, this palm tree, in order that he could eat the fruit. So what's this? You see the difference? To convey an intangible right, Matna Shchimira does not work. But you could convey an item in order to give Ploni the rights in that particular item. So the Gemara says, Lameimra, what do we see from here? To Savra Nachman, Milsa di Isib Bari, Isib Shchimira. So we'll say, what you see from here is the following. The reason these things don't work is because they wouldn't work by a bari either. In other words, we'll say, you can't convey to someone a right to live somewhere. You can't convey to someone future rights of fruits because those are intangibles. What you have to be able to do ultimately, again, is convey to someone, so I can convey to someone a home in which they have the right to live. I can convey to someone a tree in which they have future rights to fruits. Rights to future fruit. But I can't convey an intangible. So we'll say, the Gemara says, you see from here that's what? That in order to understand the scope of what a Shchiv Mira is able to do, a Shchiv Mira's rights are based on what, or a Shchiv Mira's abilities are based on what a Bari could accomplish. The Meimra, the Savra Nachman, Milsa di Isei Bebari, Isa b'Shchiv Mira, the Lesa Bebari, less Abishchimira. So you see from Rabbi say that's what? That Rav Nachman holds that whatever a Bari could do, a Shchimira has the ability to do also. Just the difference being that what? That a Shchimira could do it without what, Rabbi say? A formal kinyan. But if a Bari can't do it, meaning if it's something that a regular person could not affect, then a Shchimira can't affect that either. So I will say, we're going to stop over here. We're going to challenge that assertion in Mirtz Hashem first thing tomorrow morning, but we're ending off again with this particular construct. So I will say, we end off understanding, just we're ending off over here, in addition to all the beautiful lessons we got on Amud Aleph, right? I will say, the beautiful Eitzes of Achitofel, the importance of Eitzes of Achitofel, don't get about the Machlokas, don't rebel against the Davidic monarchy, and if it's a clear day on Shavuos, plant your wheat on that day. We also learn the idea that what? That the miracle of the Ashan, of the ascending smoke from the Mizbeach, is not that it didn't move, but rather, again, it moved in different directions, it just never dissipated. We also learned that, I will say, everyone agrees that if a person makes a statement and there's a clear intent in that statement, then the statement is predicated on that tnai. Even if you don't hold normally of umdina, what we now also understand is the machlokes is matna shchimira, is the ability for a shchimira to convey without a kinyan. Is that a daraisa derabanan? Some want to posit that it's a daraisa. But Rabbi say what we're holding right now, it seems to be it's a derabanan that is endowed with the strength of a daraisa. So it is a rabbinic law that is given biblical strength. Now the question is, what is the scope of a matna shchimira? We end off with Rav Nachman's statement that a shchiv mira can never do more than a bari. Whatever a bari could do, a shchmira could do, just without formal kinyanim. So if a bari can't do it, therefore a shchmira can't do it either. That's the assumption we're leaving off with, and that's the assumption of Meretz Hashem that we will challenge first thing tomorrow. Shkoyach.
It's like 1,500 years.